I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse Professor Martin Drum from Notre Dame University in Fremantle. Martin, good morning, and is there any chance you're in Fremantle today?
Indeed, I am. And it's a typical wintry day, a little bit of chill in the air, but I think it'll fine up nicely.
Well, there was a little bit of chill in the air last weekend after you went off to watch Fremantle and Carlton play. And Carlton, as you predicted, there was a bit of a boil over, and we're all a bit chilly here, the Fremantle supporters, Martin.
Well, there's a lot of purple on the streets. I mean, there was a lot of navy blue at Marvel Stadium, as you can imagine. A lot of purple on the streets in Fremantle, though. So that's your contrasting environments in Melbourne and Fremantle. But yeah, we've got Blues are off to wild card, and the Dockers are hosting a qualifying final, which I'm told is sold out already, Michael.
Well, I was 7,533 in the queue when the queue came up yesterday morning, in the process of me getting four tickets, Martin, and then suddenly it picked up, and it was good fun actually. They should do the queuing more often, just for the sheer excitement. But also for the sheer excitement, Martin, I was driving back from the south last weekend after the football, and I called into Secret Harbour just to see what was going on. Were there people demonstrating in the streets? Were there placards on every corner? I have to tell you, I didn't see any. But the election is on tomorrow. People will be turning up to the actual polls, although a lot have been putting in their votes in the pre-poll. And you see pictures on television, of, as you do at election time, of people in their different coloured shirts handing out how-to-vote cards. Can you tell us, can you tell the viewers, the listeners, exactly what's going on in the by-election? Do we know who's won it already?
Well, we won't, because the main bulk of voters will vote tomorrow. And even with regard to pre-polling, the people that are voting already in the last 2 weeks, and postals, they don't get disclosed until polling day. But I suspect we'll know tomorrow evening. Some people have doubted that. I suspect we will know tomorrow evening who's won. And the polls will close at 6, and the counting will start straight after that.
Well, Martin, I suspect you've got a number of gigs as a preeminent pundit on these things. Are you going to be up till midnight calling the outcome?
Oh, I've got bits and pieces. So I've got a few people knocking to know one thing or another. I think a morning one, an afternoon one, and an evening one. And that should be a bit of fun as we try to read the entrails beforehand, and then we try to analyse the results once they come in.
Well, Martin, you've consistently been telling me for some weeks now, and I haven't been discouraging you from this view, that you can't treat one nation as a mere sheer flash in the pan, that for some reason, I think it's a national issue. People are picking up on it, and it's got very little to do with Secret Harbour as such, that one nation are doing well in this poll.
That's what I've been saying, and I think it's down to underlying factors, in particular frustrations with people's personal situations, what I would call economic anxiety is a big factor, and then that sense that major parties haven't been delivering for them. Whether that's right or wrong, that's how people feel, and it's been going on for much of this year. It's fairly consistent polling as well. We saw this happen earlier in South Australia, and we saw it in the Farrer by-election. And I suspect we'll see it here again in very significant numbers, Michael.
Well, when you drive into and past and around the broader Secret Harbour electorate, it doesn't feel like a place where people would be all that full of anxiety. They've got the beach right nearby. They've got good shopping centre around about. The state government with Commonwealth support's putting in another railway station so people can get into the city of Perth quickly. It's near Mandurah. It's been the subject of suburban redevelopment over the last 30 or 40 years. It's always been a fast-growing area. You've got old areas, and not everyone looks impoverished. There's probably quite a demographic mix there, Martin. What do we know about the character or nature or whatever, for this vote?
We describe the Secret Harbour electorate as outer metropolitan, So it's a fair distance from the Perth city centre. It's a fair distance from the epicentre of a lot of services, including your major hospitals and the like. People are travelling a bit further to get some of those services. People on the outer fringes of Perth and other cities like it often feel that they're missing out and that they can be neglected. So that's where that sentiment might be a bit stronger in some of these areas than in, if this was a by-election in Cottesloe, I don't think the result would be the same. This is a very different electorate. It's just north of Mandurah as well, for people that may know where that is. So it's a place where there has been new infrastructure going in because of population growth, but does that always meet, in terms of timelines, the aspirations of local people? Are they frustrated with delays? All of those sorts of things. And you are also talking about those other concerns like immigration, which feed into housing and et cetera. So there's a lot of those different sentiments going on here.
Yeah, so it's certainly, when all is said and done, half an hour south from Fremantle. To me, it just feels like another Perth suburb. But we're going to find out. We've had this sort of imbroglio in the Labor Party when it comes to humanitarian intake of migration, where Anthony Albanese sort of overnight has said we're not cutting. There was a suggestion they were going to. Is that sort of issue, that sort of decision making, have some, final impact in this by-election as people are going into the polls?
I'm not sure that that one decision will be a huge one. I see the trend as more of a general one that's occurred over a period of time. And there's a lot of noise that happens in a by-election about candidates, about who said what, and amplifying that. But I don't know if the candidates were different, if some of the campaign was different, that the outcome would be different. So that's why I've been predicting One Nation do exceptionally well here over an extended period of time. I don't think that changes depending on whether one candidate presents well or doesn't present well. I don't think people are voting One Nation because of their candidate, Michael.
Well, I was going to ask you about how important the candidates are. There's 16 of them, Martin.
There's a lot. There's probably only a few with a half a chance. In by-elections, people see it as an opportunity to raise visibility for themselves or for their party, particularly for a minor party. And sometimes when major parties don't stand candidates, there's an opportunity for them to get a decent chunk of the vote. That won't be happening this time, I don't expect. I think it will be, there'll be three candidates, Labor, One Nation and Liberal, who will get most of the vote. The Greens will get a little chunk. And maybe legalize cannabis a tiny chunk, and then not much else in some of the other candidates.
It sounds like a caller calling the Melbourne Cup, the way you just put it.
There's
We had coming around the turn, 150 metres out from the
24
finishing
horses.
line. So, how are you going to call the last 50 metres of this race, Martin? Let our listeners know.
I'm going to call One Nation a win. And what's more, Michael, I think they'll win comfortably. And I think we'll know on the night, and they will win by a fair margin. That's my prediction.
Well, Martin, you're rarely wrong, I have to say. You called Carlton last weekend, much to my grumbles, but you were right. And if you're right here, you can't tell me that this is not going to send huge reverberations around the country, even more so than the Farrer by-election for the Commonwealth seat, because this is just south of Fremantle. This is not an impoverished part of the world. You don't find homeless around the place. People have got jobs, got a good outlook on life, and they've gone One Nation. How are you going to explain this, Martin, to your academic colleagues who think they know all about what's going on?
Let me put a little bit of data behind my prediction, Michael. The One Nation vote at the last election was 4% statewide. It's now 21%, according to the last polling. That's more than five times what it was. The One Nation vote in Secret Harbour was 8.4%, one of its highest percentages. If you have a five times, if you're in overall performance is increasing 5 times, and you extrapolate that to the result in Secret the Harbour last time, you've got 40% primary. That's more than enough with Liberal preferences to win comfortably. But I think it could be higher than that, Michael, because it's a by-election. By-elections are susceptible to protest votes. One Nation's a protest vote party. So it's a perfect storm. It's really well placed for this by-election.
Well, once that happens, if it happens according to your prediction, then the people who make these assessments, the state secretaries of all of the major parties, will be saying, well, what are the other seats that, just for starters, that look a lot like Secret Harbour looked before this vote was taken? How many more were around about the 4 or 5, and you can extrapolate X times how many seats in WA if you had a state election right now? Or at the Commonwealth level would fall to One Nation. Have we done the math?
Well, some people have done the maths at the national level, and there's all sorts of numbers, people throwing around figures around 40 to 50 seats. I've not seen a prediction that shows them winning a clear majority in their own right. But you could potentially, I don't want to look too far ahead, Michael, because this is a by-election in a state seat, to try and extrapolate that to a federal election. But if you got very strong polling in One Nation, you could have a parliament that looked like three chunks of seats: Labor, One Nation, and Conservative, Liberal National. Well, it would make for a very interesting set of governance, I would have to say.
Well, there might be a bandwagon effect here, Martin. You've often said, what's the quality of the candidates that, well, any of the parties, but One Nation in particular, running? There's always seems to be a backstory for people. You'd think there'd be a whole lot of people who think, well, hang on, I'd be a good candidate, and I'm prepared to slip over there and help them out. We've already seen that happening with some of the staff they've employed.
Well, they had enormous response when they opened up this pre-selection for One Nation. They had, I can't remember, that was a massive number of applicants.
Some 80, I think.
I think there was something in the vicinity of 80. I have to go back and check. It was a lot. So if that's any indication, Michael, there's a lot of people that wouldn't mind an opportunity. And they're starting largely from scratch in the lower house.
Well, changing the topic ever so slightly, Martin, from this by-election and your prediction that One Nation are going to bolt it in, I wonder if the one Nation candidate and the people of Secret Harbour and roundabout would like to have a data centre to power the future of AI somewhere nearby. Would they be opposed to it? I mean, there's a lot of opposition to these things. Some people didn't like wind energy because they didn't like these big propellers going around. Other people don't want nuclear plants near them or military bases that might have nuclear fallout. Some people just don't like things. How do you reckon they would react to that?
Well, I think the nuclear plant's not a bad analogy. You'll recall the coalition went to the last election promising nuclear plants in several different, I think it was 7 different locations or something. That went down as, like a lead balloon, as you'll appreciate in those communities. So data centres are not the flavour of the month amongst local communities. So government is certainly looking at how to regulate them better. And the main focus of government was to try to ensure that these centres would run on renewable energy because they are major power consumers, both in terms of electricity and also water. They don't appear to have succeeded in this aspiration because Queensland, in particular, has torpedoed this idea, as well as Northern Territory, and they're saying they need to power them on gas and coal. The outcome of this fell a long way short of the promise in terms of making sure that these are sustainable operations once they get going.
Well, you certainly don't have what you could call a national policy about it. As you say, there's fractures in the federal response. Western Australia, of course, are opposed to uranium mining, and you can take it that a Labor government here, at least for the time being, would oppose a nuclear powered solution for AI. But everyone wants to have AI, it seems. It's a question of where you locate it. They consume a heck of a lot of water. as well as energy, but they seem to be an irresistible path to the future.
Yeah, I think that it's inevitable that we're going to have these data centers. It's just a case of how you approach that. And that's why some thought needs to go into how and where you have them. There's already these data centers in a number of metropolitan areas. I suspect that maybe they might try and place some of them in regional areas. But I mean, they've still got to run all that infrastructure back to the cities where a lot of that data is being used. So there's a lot of unanswered questions still around the rollout of these centers.
Well, so it reminds me of the whole growth of social media. I mean, things like Facebook and Amazon and all of these organizations grew like topsy, and they became absolutely huge. And then we started saying, oh, they produce all sorts of evils, and we tried to sort of regulate them. And Facebook and Amazon stole, in a sense, all of the advertising money that went to what we now call the legacy media in Australia, and we've got agreements in place at the moment, and I think to be renewed, whereby some money comes back to Australian media to conduct public interest journalism, Martin. But the evils, if you like, the effect on the users of this social media have become very apparent in recent years, to the extent that a number of United States sued Meta, Facebook and Instagram, because of the effect it was having on kids, and trying to get new controls in place. And we've just had this huge, huge financial settlement, no liability accepted, but it seemed to be a huge development, Martin. Australia previously tried to bring in controls, and some countries were trying to emulate what we did here. But what do you make of all of this? And you're much closer to it than I am and many, because you're dealing with younger people at the university all the time, and they're great consumers of social media.
Yeah, I've got teenage kids as well. So it's really interesting. There was a lot of criticism of the Commonwealth government's social media ban when it came in. It was quite contentious. It's interesting that we're seeing Meta itself, probably the biggest of these companies, promising some form of self-regulation now. And that includes all sorts of stuff like shutting off social media between 12 at midnight and 6 a.m., limiting the time that users can spend on it, removing autoplay mechanisms. I mean, I think some of this stuff's soft touch because it's very, very easy to get around them. But it does show that concept of harm that is even accepted now through a court case, mind you, from Meta. And it'd be interesting that other companies also feel obliged to take some action. So there's no doubt about the issue, I think. There's no doubt about the issue of concept of harm, and it's just a question about how you go about it. So I think the problem is younger people are much smarter than us when it comes to working out how to access and use these platforms. Just trying to ban them, I'm not sure that's working.
Well, we live in interesting times, as they say, Martin. We've got a new political force in the country, including in sleepy old Secret Harbour, Western Australia, half an hour south of Fremantle. We'll find out tomorrow night just what it all means, and people will then debate what it all means, regardless of the outcome, I suppose. We've got Meta at long last doing this deal, and we've got the whole question of data centres ahead of us. I think we're going to be talking about all of those topics for some time to come, Martin.
We'll definitely be revisiting these themes, I expect.
Well, thank you for joining me today. It's as always been a an interesting and challenging discussion. And good
No,
luck.
the list will wait.
And good luck with all of your commentary later tomorrow.
Well, we'll see how it goes.
And good luck to all the teams that are coming up in the wild card round. I have no real interest there, but I will be interested to see what happens. And I'll see you next Friday.
See you then.